Previously on the Belladonna Watch Club.
He looked and he's like, oh, well, it's not like that's the guy that we're going to marry anyway.
They would show up there and sort of gather up and gaggle in posses. What?
She doesn't have a car. She wants to borrow Suki's car. Suki, she says, take it. I'm in for the night. Go do your thing. And she takes it to go to Max's house.
Mm-hmm. We know we're not in Stars Hollow anymore because where she pulls up, we're outside. It's wet. It's a city. There's mm-hmm. other cars on the street. And there's like row houses and dusted mm-hmm. flats and like yep. triple apartment things. Like, oh, wow. Okay, yeah. We're somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, looks like New York City walk-up kind of vibe, but like the bougie
that's
ones.
It. Walk-up, that's the word. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like kind of like the brownstones, but yeah, like it's that vibe. So he lives in the basement apartment. So she walks down the stairs, these like big stone, like flanked. It's beautiful, absolutely stunning, mm-hmm. which feels very academic. Yes. It definitely gives that vibe. And he opens the door and looks amazing in his sweater. He's got this uh-huh. like big, bulky sweater on, and it's just like a really nice. It's just a really good sweater.
There's a really neat contrast when he opens the door, like a really like a visual color contrast when he opens the door, because outside in the street, and also what Lorelai is wearing, everything is blue. And sort of cold looking, not like harsh cold, but like it's cold, it's sort of dark, it's nighttime, it's probably just rained because everything is kind of shiny and wet looking. And Lorelai is sort of in dark clothes as usual, and she has this great blue, navy blue, I mean blue is her color, right? But this navy blue jacket that she's wearing with a nice sort of fur cozy on the inside. I have a jacket just like it, but in like a burgundy wine red instead of, anyway, whatever. and then he opens the door and it's like warm and it's cozy mm-hmm. and all these like warm tones and like you see the wood and like he's probably got some nice, like not antique, but maybe like thrifted lamp glowing somewhere and he's all cozy and he's got, yeah, this great jumper on and like, ooh, we want to go in there.
Mm-hmm.
We want to it's go so in inviting. There. Like, please. Yeah.
And so immediately he looks like stunned. He's surprised. And okay, first of all, as a millennial, you never, ever, 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 ever go to somebody's house unannounced anymore. That's just not something that happens. I was like, girl, you didn't text? Like, you don't just show up at somebody's house because, you know, the gut reaction is like, you think he's going to have someone there.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. You're fully expecting, like, the thing would be that there's some woman appears over his shoulder or and she's mm-hmm. you know, half or like, dressed or
honey,
something.
Honey, who is it? Who's at the
exactly.
door?
Exactly. Yeah. 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 I'm really
so that's
glad
what you're expecting.
That
yeah. That would have been too painful. Oh my God. It would be like the Rachel coming down from the diner stairs or like Rachel in the diner. It would have been that, but also at Max's. And that would have just been so sad. And she just goes on and on about how she's missed him and that she couldn't lie to Rory when Rory asked. Well, first she leads actually with Rory and Dean broke up because he's like, why are you here? And she's like, Rory and Dean broke up. And he's like, okay, that sucks for Rory. Like not seeing the connection to why you're on my doorstep. And then so she tells him like, I couldn't lie to her because she asked how long it took me to get over you and I'm not and I miss you. Mm-hmm. And
her whole ramble, by the way, is all one take. She does it all in one. There are no cuts. And as a sometimes actress, I love having opportunities to do that. I've never acted on film. So, I mean, you can't do cuts. But when you get that opportunity to have a thing where you like, it's like a mini monologue and you get to just feel all the things and you sort of travel through some emotions and thoughts in a very short span of time. But you get that and the focus is all on you just for that little, that bit. Oh, it's such a great feeling. And especially when you can nail it just like she does here. So I love seeing
that. Mm-hmm. She really does. And I always wonder when she kind of prattles on like that, how much of it is scripted and how much of it is Lauren Graham
mm-hmm.
being
mm-hmm.
an amazing actress. So he invites her in. And this is the confirmation that, thank God, there's not a woman there.
Yeah.
Because he still just looks stunned. And he doesn't like kind of like glance over his shoulder. Like there's no real indication that he's trying to hide or like close the door or anything. But you just have the feeling of like, what if there's a woman there?
At this point, we're ready for anything.
Yeah. And so he says, do you want to come inside? And she says, like, she doesn't, yes. She does not hesitate. Yes, I do. Please let me in. We all want to go in. So it cuts to the party. And
did they get every 15 to 35-year-olds in, like, central Connecticut for this party? There are so many people. And there are such a range of ages. There are
holy cow. I took a screenshot of some people who do not look at all like children. They're not Chilton students whatsoever. They are like, no, they're narcs. They're undercover cops. They are pretending to be children and they're not at all. Oh my God. I'm going to pull it up right now. Yeah, it was, I was like, what? Who are these people?
There's just so many people there. And we're like, okay, well, we know that Stars Hollow is tiny. And I'm assuming Hartford is bigger, but still not like a massive city. Unless it is. Like, I have no idea. But like, where did they get all these people from? Where did Madeline, how does Madeline know all these people?
Who are these people? They are, oh my God.
A receding. He's got a leather coat. Like halfway back, halfway across his scalp.
Right. And his hair is kind of like combed over, like really tidy. And he's got this like blue button-up dress shirt with a vest on top, or like some sort of cardigan sweater vest situation. And then a leather coat on top. And then this woman in front of him has the like, let me talk to your manager hair. a black turtleneck and this like dark blue overcoat with these like huge lapels, and they both look at minimum 35.
Yeah.
Who are they? Are they from the legal team and they got lost and they're just walking through the set? Like, I don't understand who these people are. And I just was like baffled. Okay, so Madeline's house is a literal mansion with marble pillars and these like cavernous rooms. It's actually really ugly.
It's not not really magazine worthy, I don't think.
No, and I think it was one of those things at the time where they like tried to make it look like palatial as a sign of wealth, but it's like not nice and like super dated and extravagant and what's the word, gaudy? Like, it's just not nice.
Yeah.
So
poorly executed wealthy eclecticism.
Yes, it's rough. And so they're, you know, in awe. Lane has most certainly never been anywhere like that before. And she's like, this is crazy. I can't believe these are your classmates.
I love crowd scenes like this, though, in this show, especially with the allegedly young people. Because the fashions. I love how they style the people of Hartford and Stars Hollow and places. Because they're not New York. So they're not going to be wearing exactly the things of 2001. They're still wearing some things from like 1998, 97. These styles are still coming through and the shapes. But they're also, in this particular party, some of them are a bit, trying to be a bit more streamlined. And also just for like background extras, you want them to not be so standing out and, you know, distracting. So a lot of them are wearing the like the simple lines of like turtlenecks and things. Very much stepping into the new millennium. But just stepping in, yeah, still holding on to the 90s. So I love seeing that. Also, the song that's playing when we enter the party is Beck. Beck's Where It's At. Got two turntables and a microphone. Where it's at.
Yeah. Yep.
So that was adorable.
Yeah, they have a DJ who's there spinning that track, which made me laugh because the DJ setup looked tragic. It was like some literal boombox and it just looked so bad. And then so Lane says that this is like the teenage Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah. And
I had to Google what that meant. I know I'd heard of it. And my initial thing was like sodomy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I got down the rabbit hole of like biblical references and these like crazy cities full of sinners and everybody was nuts. And everybody was a homosexual and how actually modern takes on it aren't that they were crazy and homosexual, but rather they were just inhospitable. And that's the sin. Instead of it being like anti-queer, because back in the day, everybody was doing everything with everybody.
Pretty much.
And how some folks interpreted those sections of the Bible to mean a certain thing. But yeah, I was reading an article about how, or a scholarly article, not just some like BuzzFeed thing, about how it could just be that that's the sin, like not being neighborly, not helping out. That's what those towns were. Mm-hmm. That's what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, it's the quietest house party I've ever seen.
Yeah,
obviously, so we can hear the dialogue, but it's so quiet. There's like no one shouting or yelling or laughing or anything.
And so Louise and Madeline are there. Madeline is genuinely pleased to see Rory. He's like, oh my God, you came, hi. And Louise is still just being her, like, creepy, like, almost predatory, like, where's your boyfriend? Mm-hmm. Like, in her weird voice. And Rory kind of brushes it off, doesn't really want to tell her. Paris is behind them, like, kind of, like, peeping between their shoulders. So there's, like, Louise and Madeline. And then their boyfriends show up kind of behind them, or the guys that they're hanging out with at the party. And Paris is behind them, like, peeking. Like, squeezing her fake tune. She's just there.
Yeah. I wrote here, Louise gets wrapped by knockoff Justin Timberlake. And the dude behind Madeline is definitely visiting from the latest Mary-Kate and Ashley movie.
Okay.
Yep.
They're very boy band. Very boy band.
Yeah, absolutely. I love Lane in this bit, though. She is so chill. She could very well just be absolutely flipping out or just completely... just shut down and quiet and like, I don't know any of these people. But Lane proves herself to be pretty still like confident and cool, or at least she can give off the impression that she's confident and cool and still be quite, you know, nice and civil, even when she knows about all of these girls and she knows all the stories through Rory. But she's very relaxed somehow. And I love that. I love that little character trait.
Yeah, she's way more comfortable than I would be walking into a party. Although, you know what? Maybe if I was Lane, because Lane doesn't actually have a stake in the game. I was Rory, I would be more uncomfortable. But Lane's just there to be with Rory. There's no expectation of her to like mingle or say fail or do any of that, right? Mm. So I think she's kind of got like a blank slate here, and she can just be like, whatever. I'm probably never going to see anybody here again, so I don't care. So I think she's just like happy to be there and to see how some other people live.
Mm-hmm.
So Madeline and Louise are going to bring the boys to see the pool house at night, which takes a minute for Madeline to clue into the actual intention of the pool house tour.
Mm-hmm.
Paris goes, no glove, no love, as they walk away.
There's a series of great lines just in this little chunk. I don't know if it's Louise or somebody. When Madeline's failing to get it, she's not quite there. They say, you are not confused. Think, process, focus. Which I feel like I need to tell myself and adopt as a mantra. I've been super scatterbrained lately. I don't think I'm quite as like bird-brained as Madeline, but I can be sometimes. And I just need that little thing like, you're not confused. Think, process, focus. You got it. It's fine. and then, yes, then we have our no glove, no love. Brilliant. I just love Paris. Paris is showing us how she is, how she became who she is at the school. That she's not, you know, queen bee, everyone bows down to her. No, not at all. But she is her assertive self. She has her wit. She has her sneer. Everything. Brilliant, brilliant.
We're getting like the full blast of Paris at the beginning of this party. Everything. She has three really amazing lines at the beginning of this party. And that is to introduce her to Lane. That is to give Lane the full effect of Paris, right? I wrote down...
And it continues when Rory asks, like, where's the soda or where do we get snacks and something? And Paris will, you know, lead them along and, you know, follow me. And she says, keep up because I'm not turning around. And it's just, I wish I had that kind of confidence and that kind of, you know, I wish I could deliver lines like that. You know, when in my life am I going to be able to say something like that? I don't know. But I love it. I love it so much.
Yep. And then she finds out that Rory and Dee did break up. Paris's thing to say is, at least you had a boyfriend for a little while.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not the thing to say.
No.
Like, even if you're thinking
It's not, but it's revealing something so big about Paris. So Lane meets Paris head on, and it's awesome. I'm so glad that they get this encounter.
This is good. Yeah, and Lane is like, wow, you really didn't exaggerate about Paris. And Rory goes, Paris needs no embellishment.
This is it, yeah.
And she is just Paris full force at this party.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Tristan and Summer are there And they're arguing, you know, teenage parties. There's always going to be people crying, people fighting. There's always, you know, the drama. Tristan is understandably upset because Summer has been like locked in the bathroom with a guy for a little while and wants to know what she was up to with him because, you know, that's a little sketchy. You know, you don't really want to see your girlfriend locked away with a guy at a party. Like, and she's awful. She's just like, what? Like, what are you? I don't, like, we weren't doing anything. It's just totally brushing him off. Mm-hmm. And he says, like, but you're my girlfriend. Like, what do you? And she's like, what? You're going to be caveman now? Like, bonk me on the back of the head and drag me off, like, to your Porsche? And she's just terrible. And you're like, okay, we don't like Tristan, but that's not great either.
No. Yeah, exactly.
And you feel pretty bad for him at this point because even though we think he's gross and he does a lot of things to intentionally get on people's nerves, you can tell that he is hurt and confused and being treated badly.
Hmm. You're supposed to feel bad for him at this point. I couldn't.
Yeah, fair. I really couldn't. Fair enough. At all.
Also, the song playing at this moment is Miss Jackson by Outkast. So I'm sorry, Miss Jackson. Ooh, I am for real. There you go.
Such a good song. Didn't mean to make your daughter cry.
Exactly.
Very, very appropriate.
I apologize a trillion times.
And then so we find out that Paris has to be here because Paris is like, so why are you here anyway? Rory kind of tells her that she and Dean broke up, blah, 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 blah. And Paris says that she has to be here until 10:30 because her mom said so. Because she doesn't seem like enough of a people person. So she needs to go to the party. Because she keeps checking her watch.
I love, love, love seeing Rory and Paris chat in this way. And they're kind of talking about this same sort of thing. So, again, they're talking about, like, preparing for school and for, you know, focusing on Harvard and this and that. This is what I'm thinking about. So we know about Rory's educational plans, right? But we also learn Paris's lovelessness. Like, she's just said, at least you had a boyfriend. Which is, you know, it's like, yeah, if she had one, that's just kind of not the point. But
now he's gone and I'm sad about it. Like, now he's gone.
But also because Paris has this want for a boyfriend. And I think this and a little bit after this as well, Paris maybe challenges Rory's idea of what one of those girls is that she so badly does not want to be like. I don't want to be one of those girls whose life falls apart without a boyfriend or like I feel like I'm nothing without a boyfriend. Paris wants these things, but she is also so hyper school focused and she also has these dreams and these ambitions to be a, you know, a college girl and to do all these things, but she still also can feel heartbroken. She can still also feel all of this. And I don't know if during this episode or sometime after it actually like clicks in for Rory, what it really meant in Paris's eyes to see Rory be successful, a challenge at school, be really, really smart, be her rival and have an adoring boyfriend and be, you know, and all of these things. I don't know if it has yet clicked for her, how Paris sees her. And so it's interesting whenever we're reminded how much of not a romantic, but how much of a lovesick person Paris is.
Yeah. She's very affection starved in so many aspects of her life. Like she doesn't have close friends. She doesn't have loving parents. She doesn't have a significant other. She is unlikable, I think partially by design to protect herself from rejection. Right. But she is affection starved, hands down. And so they're there and they're chatting and Henry the Korean sees Lane and beelines. And Lane is like, oh God, there's like one other Korean at the party. And of course he found me. Korean radar.
And but he's a cutie.
He is a cutie.
He's so and cute. So
he asks her to dance and she's like, no, thank you. I'm just here with my friend. I don't really want to dance. Like we're probably leaving soon. And he goes, just one dance, one song, and it won't be like a dance remix. Should be like, it's not going to be a long one. It's going to be a normal one. Like, don't worry about it.
He's reasonable. So he's cute and he's reasonable.
Mm-hmm. And Lane is like, oh, fine. Like, does not want to go out to dance with this guy, but does it anyway. And then we see Summer and this guy dancing. And so Tristan is there. He's on his own and he's watching too. And Rory sees, we all see, dancing with this guy, presumably the guy that she was in the bathroom with, or who knows, it could be anybody. And he's dancing like with his mouth open and doing like finger guns. He's like, like this, I feel like this is just to piss off Tristan at this point. Oh, she's picking literally anybody to dance with. Doesn't matter who it is. She's just trying to annoy Tristan. And so we cut back to Max's house, and Max and Lorelai are hot and heavy. They are making out, and they just have this, like, especially Max is like out of control. He's like heavy breathing, he's panting, he's like, he just cannot contain himself. Lorelai is a little bit more composed, but Max is like, okay, you sit over there, I'm gonna sit on the chair, we're gonna put the table, we gotta slow this down. He's just like out of control.
This is crazy. Yeah. This is nuts. Yes, it is.
And I think Lorelai is very much enjoying having this effect on him because she is definitely more put together. Like, she's having a nice time, but she's not as, like, completely unraveled as Max is. He tries to cool things down. Like, we have to talk about this. We have to just, like, pump the brakes. And he says, like, I've been thinking a lot about you and you know, about us. And Lorelai's like, I haven't. Max is like, thanks, I guess. Like, but why are you even here then? And she's like, well, no, but that's been on purpose. I've had to, because it's too painful. And I've had to, like, compartmentalize, basically, and, like, keep it. I can't think about you, which is what Rory is doing right now. That's like it. Mother, like daughter. Like, she is showing her how to behave, basically, and expecting her to behave differently than she does. Yeah, so she's basically saying, like, out of self-preservation, I have not been thinking about us at all. And then they kind of have this conversation about how nothing's changed. She's still Rory's daughter. Mother. She is still Rory's mother.
Yes.
And he is still Rory's teacher, and it's still complicated, and those hard facts haven't changed, and they can't really think of a way to circumvent that in a way that makes people comfortable.
So while she's been not thinking about it, deliberately avoiding thinking about it, he has been thinking about it and still has reached nothing.
Yeah.
So either which way, thinking it through versus not thinking it through, they still don't actually come to any solution yet.
No, and that they're still missing each other, and that it sucks that they're apart, but that they don't have a solution just yet. So they cut back to the party, and Lane is dancing with Henry, and it's so cute, and they look so sweet. Now it's a slow dance. You can tell there's been some time passing.
I wonder how many songs later it is.
Right?
He said one song.
And when Lane was going off with him, she was like, if I don't come back in one song, you need to come up with something to, like, get us out of here, like some sort of illness. Rory goes to check on Lane and is like, what are we doing here? Are we leaving? And she was like, she says, no, you're not coming down with anything. It was just some seasonal allergies. Like, you're okay. It's okay.
I'm really, really glad that Rory is allowed to be happy for Lane. And, you know, this is Lane's stuff. This has nothing to do with me. She's going to be happy. That's really, really, really good. She gives her that space. The song playing now is called From Red to Blue. It's by Billy Bragg. I'm going to include a list of the songs that play in this episode because they feel very specifically chosen for the scenes. So we've just heard Max and Lorelai say, nothing's changed. You know, nothing's changed. There's nothing going on. And then From Red to Blue is, things have changed. So much has changed. You've changed. You have responsibilities now. So, like, with something, I don't know what kind of relationship it is exactly, but the lyrics are like, you, is it like you have a son now, or you have a child now? And it's kind of circumstances being very, very different, that it now affects behavior, and it now affects relationship, and it's a really good song. It's got a really nice sort of bluesy groove. And another song that was playing in an earlier scene is by Elvis Costello, and it's called Every Day I Write the Book.
I like what you said about Rory being happy for Lane, because she easily could have been bitter and like, no, you're here with me. I'm going through something and I don't want you like off with some guy. Like, you're supposed to be supporting me here.
Yeah, they definitely could have written her like that, written her to do that. And it would have felt in character, but it would have also still been really irritating.
Oh, absolutely. Like, we wouldn't have been okay with that at all. But it would have been a very natural reaction for a 16-year-old first breakup. You know, your wingman is suddenly getting attention. And what you're saying about circumstances changing, now Lane is the one getting the romantic attention while Rory is on the sidelines. So thank you, writers, for not poo-pooing on Lane's lovely moment with Henry. And they're cute and they're snuggly. And Rory is happy for them and is allowing her the space to actually have a nice romantic interaction, I think probably for the first time ever.
I think
and
so.
is being such a good friend to Lane in this moment. And so Rory, given the green light that everything is still good with Lane, walks away, and then this happens.
My watch stopped. What time is it?
It's 10:35.
Yes, bye.
Beelines.
She literally runs away, like weaves through the people and is out. I'm like, out the door. I love that so much.
Oh, I want to mention Paris's hair.
It's so cute.
It's so cute. So she's got like half French braids, I suppose, coming down on one on either side of her face, like pulling the hair out of her face. But her hair is still down. And it's just, I don't know. I feel like we've never really seen her sort of do herself up or doll herself up. Her clothes are still very, very simple. But I like this cute little half attempt at doing a hairstyle. Like, it's clearly some effort because it's braiding, right? But a little attempt at style. Very cute. Very sweet.
I don't think I'm going to give too much away here for you. We learn later on that Paris has basically like a nanny, like somebody that takes care of her at home, because obviously her mother is garbage. So I like to imagine it being like her mom tells her that she has to go, and I can't remember the lady's name, and I feel so sorry about that, because that's like the only tenderness that Paris gets is from this woman. And I imagine her being like, no, like you're going to a party, let's do your hair, and like sitting her down and like doing it for her. Because I imagine Paris, because she says like it's the same people we see every day, just now you get to see them dancing. Like, she doesn't care about the party. And so I imagine she wouldn't care about her own appearance at this party either, because she's like, they see me every day. Why would they need to see me any differently than they see me every day? And then this woman being like, no, honey, like, let's put a little bit, like, let's sit down and we're going to get you ready. And so that feels nice to me. Oh, she actually just refers to her as Nanny. So that is why I don't know her name.
Oh, well, that'll do it.
Okay, because I felt terrible for not remembering her name, but she just calls her Nanny. Okay. So I imagine that Nanny is doing Paris's hair for this and is giving her that little zhuzh, a little confidence out. So Paris leaves. Rory, letting Lane do her thing, sits down and pulls out her book. She obviously brought a book. And as she is reading, again, we have Tristan and Summer, and they come by, and Summer is still just being like so awful. And Tristan is like, you're not even like, do you want to dance? Like, you don't want to do anything with me? And she's like, you're following me around. Stop. He's like, well, you're my girlfriend. And she's like, I'm so tired of hearing you say you're my girlfriend. Like, if he has to say it like 32 times a day or 23 or whatever number she says, maybe you're doing the girlfriend thing wrong.
Yeah.
And so she's like, I don't think I want to be your girlfriend anymore. I think we should break up. And then just like, that's it. It's so, so cold and just dismissive. And then she's like, eh, we're breaking up. I don't care.
How long have they been together, though?
Like weeks.
Yeah. I like, Tristan really surprised me with his investment into this relationship. And so, like, in the previous scene at the party, we see them having this squabble in front of everybody, but we see it sort of through Rory's eyes. And so there's, like, a focus on Tristan being upset, watching her dancing. Mm. Like, oh, Not Tristan. No. No. Like, oh, God, I see where this is going straight.
Oh, yeah.
Away.
You see it a mile away. The, like, mm-hmm. post-breakup, everything out the window, almost, mm-hmm. like, revenge makeout. Like.
mm-hmm. But Summer being so cold to Summer. Summer being so cold to Tristan. Because climate of how change. I because of how I personally feel about Tristan from everything we've seen him do and say, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. my reaction instantly was good. Suffer, mm-hmm. you jackass. Yep. I yep. hate him. It is interesting that they write it in the moment when they do actually break up to see him sort of contrasting Dean and Rory's breakup, that Tristan wants to talk through the break.
Yeah, he does.
Talk about it. He really yep. does. He doesn't, he's angry and emotional, of course, but like he doesn't want to just rage about it and hide. He wants to talk it through and find out what happened.
That's it. What? He doesn't want to be in front of everybody. He wants to go outside. Can we talk about this? Like,
great choice, great character choice. But personally, I don't buy it. Like, I don't think Tristan would actually do that. Everything we've learned from about Tristan and how he is with anyone else's feelings, I didn't believe that he would actually be as, like, emotionally invested as he seems to be. Especially
I don't think
when
it's about her.
Girlfriend who's so cold.
I think it's the same thing with Rory. I don't think it's about her. I think it's about him not getting what he wants and him not being handed everything on a silver platter and it coming to him, like the girls just like throwing themselves at his feet, you know? Mm-hmm. The fact that she is challenging him, the fact that she is the one that wants to be with other people rather than him wanting to be with other people, I think that that's his investment in it. And it's not, again, about her as a person. It's about like his ego and him not having the upper hand in the relationship. Mm. I think that's what it is. I think he's used to having the upper hand. And that is more what's throwing him rather than Summer herself being interested in other people or doing other things, which is why he's always like, but you're my girlfriend, but you're my girlfriend, but you're my girlfriend. Because he doesn't have that the upper hand. Yeah, he doesn't have the upper hand in the relationship. He's not the one kind of steering the ship here. She is.
In which case, I find it a weird choice that he would be seemingly, like, pining after her and, like, actually following her around the party. I doubt his actual heart. I doubt his heart. I don't believe that his heart could be broken given how cold and completely unfeeling he is for everybody around him. That I almost feel like a more believable reaction from him would be, oh, you're going to be like that? Oh, fine. And then, yeah, like that's the long and short of it, you know? So, yeah.
I think that would be a more believable, like, fine, you don't want to be with me? On to the next. Like, and just like put his arm around some other girl that he knows has into him and like has been into him for a while. And going for it. So, yeah, I could see that. There must be something to Summer that we don't know. There must be something to their relationship that we just don't know about. Yeah. Because everything that we've seen has been very superficial and meant to just be grating and awkward, or not awkward, but uncomfortable and obnoxious. And we don't know. I'm glad we don't know. I don't want their spinoff. No. I don't care. And so I did write good riddance because she's treating him terribly.
Yes.
So Summer, bye. Go away. Mm-hmm. Like, bad match. You're toxic. He's toxic. Toxic people, stop it. You're making everybody uncomfortable. Good. You broke up. Now we don't have to be forced to watch any of your nonsense anymore. So then
she's
Lane,
giving Belle Watling a bad name.
Oh, my God. Belle Watling. The woman was just a peach comparatively.
She would be ashamed of you, Summer.
Maybe she wouldn't. I don't know anything about her. I need to, like, watch some clips, and we'll come back. We'll bring her up in a third episode. we'll bring her back, and we'll see if she's worthy of our praises, saying she's better than Summer. We don't know. So Lane comes rushing back with a problem. Lane has a very serious problem.
She nearly body checks Tristan on his way out of the room. They like, they don't, but they like just graze shoulders, but they almost like slam into each other. It's great.
I have a major problem.
What?
Henry, the guy I've been dancing with?
Yeah.
Okay, so he's really good in school. He's going to be a doctor, pediatrician to be exact. His parents are extremely involved in their local church. He himself helps out with Sunday school. He speaks Korean fluently. He respects his parents. And he's also really cute, very funny, and surprisingly interesting.
Lane, I'm sorry, but I'm totally failing to see the problem here. I'm falling for a guy my parents would approve of.
Lane's problem. He's perfect. And I like him.
No. Yep. And she goes on to say there'd be dancing followed by lots of praying, but there would be dancing. And so she's like, we have to go. We have to go now. We need to get out of here. I cannot be subjected to this lovely person who fits my parents' expectations, like on the nose. Like, so they try to leave and Henry pops up. He's like, oh, are you going? And they're like, yes, we've got to go. He asks Lane, oh, well, like, can't you just stay for like one more dance? And Murray says, no, sorry. Lane, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Two things I really like here. One, I really love Henry because first he was reasonable when he was asking for the dance. And then here he says, he apologizes to Rory and he says, sorry, I've been monopolizing Lane all evening. Oh, how thoughtful. That's so kind. And then I love Rory's, like, sort of cover standing in for Lane saying, I have a strict mother.
Yes. And he's like, oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Like, somebody here has a strict mother.
Yeah, that's really, really cute. And so, yeah, they're trying to leave. And Lane is like, yeah, I'll dance with you again. Of course, like, my dude, what just happened? Like, exactly. Okay. And Lane just looks so excited and eager, and it's really, really cute when she says yes. It's super cute. Mm-hmm. So we cut back to what Lorelai's been up to, and she and Max have been doing the eggplant dance. They are in bed, and they have obviously been very intimate, and they're trying to figure out again what to do. But first, Lorelai's just like tries to get up and leave. She's like, "Well, that was nice. Like, see you later." And Max is like, "Whoop, whoop, 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 whoa, whoa, whoa!" Like, again, Max is the one who's trying to like discuss and not just shunt things away and put things aside. He's like, "No, we have to talk about this. You're not just gonna like come to my house, sleep with me, and disappear again. That's not how this is gonna be. You didn't just come over and tell me you miss me." And that's just going to be it. And Lorelai is like, fine. So they talk and they try to decide what to do. And they're like, well, being apart isn't working. Being together really doesn't work. And so like the plan that Max comes up with, again, him and his weird plans. The plan is to talk on the phone about us regularly. How is that going to change anything? This bothered me so much. This is the same as the, like, I'm going to call you Rebecca. Like, boy, your plans are weird.
It's not a very clever plan. It just seems like it seems like a plan you come up with post-coitus. Okay, how do we communicate and not be in the same room? Ah, telephone. That's it.
But what's there to communicate about? Because Rory still goes to Chilton, and he is still a Chilton teacher. And so his genius plan, and I wrote that. What did I write? Oh, no, his brilliant solution is to talk on the phone regularly. Like, that's not going to make it easier for either of you to be apart if you still feel that it's not an appropriate situation.
This is it, because they haven't declared, I don't think, what direction they intend to head in, because they're fully aware that like it's not a smart thing, but they also still have feelings for each other. So like, talk on the phone by all means, but are you doing that in order to maintain your relationship or to help turn it in a different direction? To what end? Yes, that's it. Yeah.
So I
also I really wish you had never mentioned Justin Trudeau.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I know we can't unsee it.
Max still looks like Justin Trudeau, and I don't want to see the Prime Minister in bed. Oh, God. Shirtless in bed. No, thank you.
Oh, I don't mind. I'm fine with it. But yeah,
he
does.
I like some chest hair, though. I like that we get to see some chest hair. You don't see that very often. I'm a big fan.
Especially in the early 2000s. I feel early 2000s was like bare. Yep. Everybody needed to be bare. barely even wearing any clothes too. Like, it's, I guess it's not quite Y2K fashion at that point, but it wasn't the like Jessica Simpson low rise crop top quite yet. I don't think. Yeah. I think that, but yeah, they're like Y2K was very hairless and yes. like bare, just skin everywhere. So back to the party, Rory walks in on a really sad Tristan playing the piano.
Oh my God.
Girl. Alone in a room. And this is where Rory's like empathy and pity and niceness just gets on my nerves.
Okay, hang on. First, we see him at the piano and I smacked my forehead because I'm like, there is no way. You, like, this show is not trying to convince me to feel any kind of like romanticism for him. Mm-hmm. This guy is a jerk. He is an absolute jackass, an asshole. I hate him. But there's also some personal investment in that. But, like, you know, anyway, no way are they trying to make me feel any kind of like, ooh. Is that? Also, if a room that big, unless it was locked.
There would be other people there.
There would be people in that room. Yeah, exactly. Also, do we think he can even play the piano? No, I don't think he can.
No, I think he's being manipulative. Like, I think he's just doing it for attention. He's like, I'm going to go and be sad and sulk in the corner until somebody comes to check on me because I'm so sad.
And he's like, he's intelligent enough to be at this school, right? So he probably, or not so much intelligent, but he's like, you know.
He passes. Like, if he was flunking out, he wouldn't be there because Chilton has its standards, right?
So he's scholarly enough to... Yeah. To have this kind of a sense of like classic romantic figures and you know what kind of a romantic scene can I paint, right? A pathy feelings, but like for what audience? Like, she's not even in there yet and he's already at the piano. But I think he's probably doing two things. One, he's doing it for himself. Like, sometimes you don't need an audience. You just need to be dramatic for your own feelings of, like, I just need to, I have had.
Oh, I do that sometimes.
Shut the door, like, slam the door and, like, turned my back to the door and slid down in, like, sobbing tears. Mm-hmm. And that was for my own sake, really. So to build it, but also I think you probably got it there that like he's, you know, ready for someone to come and find him. And like,
that's it.
They need to find me in this really sad.
He wants scene. The attention. He wants the comfort. He wants somebody to come and tell him he's such a good person and he doesn't deserve it. And he was treated so badly. And yeah, because everything he does is about the performance, right? He wants the attention with every single thing he does. And I don't necessarily think he's doing it specifically to get Rory's attention because there's no guarantee that she would go in that room. But he wants it from somebody. He needs the validation that his emotions of being seen.
Mm-hmm. And Rory, just as you were about to mention, Rory unfortunately has that sympathy gene. Because we've already seen her, how she was with Maury. Remember when Maury and Babette, when Cinnamon died, right? And they go over to Maury and Babette's house. And Rory, wow, Rory and Maury, that's tough to say together. Rory, she sort of fakes this genuineness in her sympathy and comfort, right? So we've already seen her, she's able to do that, and she will do that with someone she doesn't really have much that kind of connection with. But that is a totally different set of circumstances and scenario to, you are here with Tristan. Mm-hmm. Girl, leave the room. Go away. Mm-hmm. There are other people at this party. Like, I get she wants to be away from it too, but there are other people at this party she can go and talk to if she feels like, oh, Elaine's busy and Paris has left. Like, people who aren't total pricks. Okay? You can go and talk to somebody else.
Yep. So she walks in, she sees him, and she kind of is like, sorry about Summer, that really sucks. And he says he doesn't want to talk about it. At that point, you turn around and you leave. You're like, okay, bye. I said, I recognized, you knew I was there. I said the thing that is the polite thing to say, if you want to acknowledge, sure. But then she just starts to talk to him about like the biology test. And even Tristan is like, what are you doing? And she's like, well, you said you didn't want to talk about Summer, so I'm talking about something else. And everybody is like, why? Go away. Do something else. You don't actually need to talk to him. And she feels really bad that, you know, he got dumped and all of that. But this bugs me about her because she also did this, you know, she did this with Paris when Paris was horrible to her the whole time, spread rumors about her parents or her mom and her teacher and the whole school. Like, people actively harm Rory and she is there for them and she opens herself up to them and is like basically a doormat and it comes off as being kind and caring and sympathetic, but it's possibly, you know, like, but stand up for yourself. Like, they treat you really badly. You do not need to be nice to them. You can be courteous. You can be polite.
Or you can do like I do, and you just ignore them. You just shut it off. I got bullied a lot in high school, and it, you know, affected me in various ways. But I got bullied by people I wouldn't engage with. And so I was kind of safe from it, that I would just be like, all of your actions and things are going nowhere, so I just don't associate with you at all. And then, I don't know.
That's it.
Tires them out. Just don't associate. Just leave them be. Leave them be.
Yeah. So it really bothers me sometimes when Rory is just so, like, sickeningly sweet that it's, like, detrimental to her own well-being. Like, she doesn't, like, I think she just feels, like, this obligation to be so kind to everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessary. It's not necessary. It really bugs me. It gives me the ick when I see her do it. Like, when she did it with Paris after Parents' Day, and when she does it here with Tristan, and I'm like, girl, you are under no obligation to – you are not responsible for their feelings.
No,
like, exactly. Like, you don't need to do that. And she sits down, and she talks to him. Mm. And he goes, you just loved it, didn't you? Seeing me nailed like that must have been a great moment.
And he says, you loved it, she loved it, everybody loved it. And then I said out loud, well, I loved it. I loved it. It was great. Amazing. Put him in his place.
And that to me was so telling of his own, like, pettiness and vindictiveness, because that's how he behaves. Right? Mm-hmm. And Rory literally scrunches up her nose. Like, no, I didn't like seeing that. That was gross. Like, that was uncomfortable. And he's assuming that everybody else is out there loving it, like reveling in other people's hardships. And I'm like, no, you behave that way. Nobody else likes that. You like that, not her. And yeah, Rory is like, ew, no, her face is so, like, I did not love that. And it just really shows that he has, like, such low self-esteem overall that he just, like, projects. And, yeah, when he says, like, everybody loved it and that he just cares so much about what other people think and everything that he does is about, yeah, how he's perceived by the world around him, right? And it's just, like, it's kind of sad that his self-esteem is so low, but then he makes everybody's lives miserable because his self-esteem is so low. So that it takes away the sympathy from our end. Like, well, if you weren't such a jackass, I would feel worse for you.
Yeah.
And so he proceeds to ask where Dean is, and she says that they broke up, and he says, idiot. And they talk about, are you going to get back together? Are you not? And, you know, both of them.
Rory says something really interesting here, that it might just be sort of a comfort, sort of relating level, but first she says, he's not my boyfriend anymore. And, oh, why did you break up? And, well, he didn't want to be. He didn't want to be my boyfriend. Wrong. No.
We don't know that. I think he was clear because she says he didn't want to be my boyfriend anymore. And he made it very clear.
I guess so. I don't know.
So she says he was clear. We didn't see it. So it does leave us guessing.
Yeah.
But I don't think she would say that. I think she would be more confused about it.
Yeah.
I don't think she would use those words. She says he was really clear about it. And I think Dean would be standing up for himself. If the whole town is going against him, he would say, I didn't break up with her.
Maybe.
I think he would. Like, I know he's trying to avoid it and he's trying to just, like, not engage and not feel any feelings. But if the entire town is coming at you being like, why did you break up with her? He would be like, wait, we broke up? I didn't break up with her. What's going on? Are we broken up? Like, I think there'd be a lot more confusion around them breaking up. And he would
It's more, to me, it's her choice of saying he didn't want to be my boyfriend anymore. It's like, no, he still wants to be your boyfriend, but he wants you to feel the same way back. I don't know. I don't like it. But then I especially don't like when, yeah, Tristan goes, oh, idiot. And she says, yeah, so is Summer. No, they should not be relating at this point. No. Summer is an idiot, but she should not be part of this conversation right now.
At no point have you ever thought of Tristan being like boyfriend material. So
exactly.
Yeah. Summer, she's not an not wanting to be with Tristan. That's it. Mm-hmm. Summer not wanting to be with Tristan is not suddenly making him likable and kind or pleasant or any of that. I have a clip here of Tristan apologizing. And this is the only time that Rory is, I feel like, honest and like actually real about him at all.
Hey, I'm sorry I gave you such a hard time for a while.
Oh, it's okay.
It is.
Well, no, but you're sad.
So why do that? Like, why be so fake that you're like comforting and doing all of these things, but it's transparent because he even knows that he was horrible and why is she sitting with me? This doesn't make any sense. And it's weird that she has this drive to be liked and like everybody.
And he even says, you are very odd. He agrees with you. But also at this point in the last episode, at this point of the episode, like minutes, Dean says, you're very weird. It's the same line coming from these boys. I hate this. I hate this so much because Tristan is absolutely awful and appalling. And I do not like that they are forcing me to sit through and accept this scene happening and these parallels happening. I hate this.
Yeah, it's really bad. And I think everybody hates it. And I think it's just teenage girl being confused and lonely and not knowing where to go or where to turn and is seeing somebody else in pain and wanting to relate to them, even if it's somebody awful. And I think she's doing it on purpose. Like, I think she's doing like a bit of a self-destructive thing here by like putting her in a situation where somebody who has hurt her it's a revenge thing. And I think because he has had that interaction with Dean, I think that Tristan, she's just like drawn to him because of the drama. She's drawn to him because she's hurting and is like using him as this like proxy thing. Because
Proxy Dean.
Yeah. But who is the worst person to talk to right now? It would be Tristan. Who would piss Dean off the most to talk to right now? It would be Tristan. And
she's not cognizant or even conscious of making these decisions. Yeah.
So I think this is only happening from this like point of view of it being the worst possible choice.
Yeah.
Which she clues into. Like, I think she wants the attention. She knows he's going to give her the attention. She wants to feel good about herself. She knows that he has been like after her and wanting to like get that validation from her. And I think she wants to be seen in a positive light, or maybe be pursued or like, again, unconsciously, she wants somebody to make her feel seen. And and so she's around him a lot because she knows that he's going to at least pay attention to her. And I think subconsciously she might want something to happen because of those dangerous feelings, because of those self-sabotaging inner, as RuPaul would say, her inner saboteur is driving her to the most rebellious, riskiest, most explosive, not explosive, but impactful situation.
When I think about this scene and the where it eventually gets to as well, this whole scene, it makes me think of something that I might have entertained the idea of in my brain only. Like whatever it is, I'd go home from the party and then I'd be like ready to go to bed, and I would just sort of be lying there and I would think about what could have happened, but with no no kind of reality of like, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to do this next. I would have just like entertained the idea of it to sort of satisfy that kind of desire and that curiosity as well. But that's it. I would have been some like little daydream for one night, and then I move along. I wouldn't have actually gone through with it and had it all happen. Because then what happens, Lisa? What do they do?
They kiss. So they're there on the piano bench and they're like glancing at each other's lips. And you kind of expect Rory to be like, whoop, nope. Like what's going to happen? But she's here for it. She's hurting. Mm-hmm. And she knows that he is attracted to her. And so she lets it happen. I would have been the one doing it. I would have been the one doing the, like, what is going to be the most impactful? Like, what can I do that would have like the biggest impact on my life right now? Whether positive or negative, it would have been the, like, what it would be the most like explosive possible thing for me to do in this moment. And it would be to find Tristan. That would have been me. The one who just does the most. It's going to piss me off until I find the word. It's not rebellious, contradictory, conflicting, whatever. That would have been me. Full tilt in the other direction. And that's what Rory is allowing. I don't think she's consciously doing it, because she's not like, I'm going to go out, I'm going to do all this stuff. No. But I think she's been kind of skirting around it the whole time. She's been zeroing in on it.
This is where she's between you and me, because I would have entertained the idea, but I would not have had the, like, the courage or even any kind of bravery or gumption to put it into play. Whereas you had the gumption to just to go off, not fantasize about it first, but just go and try it, do it. And Rory is there right in between. But oh, again, song break. The song playing right now in the show is The Crystal Lake by Granddaddy.
Don't like that.
It's a great song, though. And the lyrics, I wrote some of these down. Should never have left the Crystal Lake. I've got to get out of here and find my own way. Lost my way again.
So they kiss. And Rory's
face completely changes.
Crying. And Tristan, he's like, well, did I do something? Did I bite your lip? Like, he's concerned, which I actually think is kind of nice, because he could be like, what? Like, what is happening right now? Like, he could be more like taken aback and almost disgusted or whatever. But he's just genuinely like, are you like, what did I do? Is this not really considering the fact that they broke up yesterday? Like,
They broke up yesterday. And all, exactly. Like, he says, did I bite your lip? So, like, you're not even surprised at the, like, well, we just kissed. Oh, we just kissed. He's the, did I bite your lip? Like, not, oh, I understand you're surprised because we just kissed and this never happens. It's just like, yeah, of course we're kissing. Oh, but did I do something wrong? Did I bite your lip? Like, you know, he sort of bypasses the surprise of the kiss. And he asks about, I don't know. He seems not surprised enough for my, like,
okay,
like,
that's fair. Yeah, he doesn't seem very level about it. Like, too level. Like,
this has probably happened before with other girls, right?
Yeah, it's so weird. Yeah. Yeah, his reaction is a little too typical, like deadpan in a way. Yeah. Like, yes. And then so that's when it kind of really hits Rory that she's kissing someone. It's not Dean. She's not with Dean. Oh my gosh, Dean and I broke up. And it all just like really hits her. It really took that, like, kissing someone else. Literally now the second person that she has ever kissed. She's never kissed another person other than Dean. And now she's kissing Tristan, and it's just like too much. And she's like, oops, floodgates. Oh my God. So she goes, runs, grabs Lane. It's like, we need to go. We're leaving right now. And Henry's like, can I have your number? Like, you can't just, oh. And so she's like, we're the only Kims in Stars Hollow. Like, look at off they go. And
I just gave my number to a potential Korean doctor.
And Lorelai gets home from being with Max, and it's kind of the, you know, same setup as the previous night, where someone comes in the door, and except instead of Rory crying at the door, now it's Rory in the living room with the world's biggest tubs of ice cream.
Massive. Like, they're Ben and Jerry's as well. That's not cheap.
That is not cheap. That is like a $60 worth of ice tub of ice cream. Exactly. Absolutely. Each of them were expensive. So where did they get them? I've never seen those tubs of ice cream ever.
I was Googling.
I did Google this. And apparently this might be a Luke special, like access like industrial size ice cream because of Luke. Because I guess in a few episodes from now, there's going to be a scene in his like stock room, which might give us a little bit more insight. I don't actually remember. So that might be a surprise for both of us later on. But there has been a lot of chatter online about how to acquire such a tub of Ben and Jerry's. And there is no definitive answer. And all of the chatter around it is in this episode of Gilmore Girls, because I did not Google Gilmore Girls, this episode, tub of ice cream, whatever. I literally just Googled giant tub of Ben and Jerry's. And all the results are like, I was watching Gilmore Girls. It's the breakup part two. And Rory is there with these tubs of ice cream. So
I love fandom a lot of, sometimes.
Right? There's a lot of speculation about where it could come from and where one might be able to get some. People think that maybe if you lived close to the factory, there's this like supply of various sizes of Ben and Jerry's because it's there. But there is no confirmation of that. I think it's just going to live in some in the lore of Ben and Jerry's. And like, is it possible? I don't know. How do we get it? And then I was like, wait, how much ice cream is that actually? Because one of them is empty.
And yeah.
The other one is mostly empty, or at least half empty. So are we thinking that she ate all of it, or maybe there was like just barely anything left in one of them and she finished it? Because it's not 3 gallons. I looked up 3 gallon and they're typically quite tall. Okay. I had to do gallons because I feel like it's American and you have to do ice cream in gallons or big, large quantities in gallons. Like that just felt right. So it's either a 1.5 or 2 gallon tub of ice cream, each of them. 2 gallons is 9.5 liters. So we're Canadian. So 9.5 liters of ice cream. So for us, context, again, so we Canadians get our milk in bags. And so you get like a 3-bagger and it's like a bag of milk, right? That's 4 liters of milk. So 2 of those plus a little bit extra is one of those tubs of ice cream. This is also how I do math. And I'm like, okay, so if you have like this and then you're like, okay, you're going to take a little bit from here. I can't, there's a lot of associating going on. So, that's so much ice cream.
That's a lot of ice cream.
And where do they store it? They just have a fridge. Like, where did it come from? Ridiculous. So she's crying. She's got there. She's wallowing. Lorelai is probably internally doing like, yes, she's not crazy anymore. The drugs wore off and she's okay.
I do love you mentioned that this is basically it's the same setup as the final scene from the previous episode, but it's also because we follow along from the exact same moment to start this episode. It's a bookend scene.
Yep.
Only like, yeah, as you said, Rory is actually expressing her emotions now. So yeah, Lorelai is the one coming home. But Lorelai comes home and I wrote like, quote unquote, fixed almost. Like, she's not dreadfully sad, but like, they have some method that they're going to test out. I mean, she's just had a romp with Mac. So,
a little bit of an eggplant dance. So not a little bit of an eggplant dance. They did the full dance.
To find Rory near enough broken. Yeah. And she, her performance in this scene is incredible. She absolutely is miserable. Her face is like melting. And it's such a relief to finally see her crying and feeling her emotions. Cause you just want that. They drag us right to the very end to see her processing it and dealing with it. And so like, I guess the kiss was the trigger to like unlock these emotions that she has. However, unfortunately, now her feelings and everything is even messier than it was before. She wouldn't have had this extra Tristan element in there if she had just been upset and cried about it before, but like, oh no. So she has a very long story to tell Lorelai, if she's going to tell Lorelai the whole thing. I don't know.
Yeah. And this scene made me just ache thinking about, because she's curled up on Lorelai's lap sobbing sobbing into her mom's lap, and her mom is just there comforting her. And I'm not ready ever to be in those shoes, in Lorelai's shoes. Oh my God. I was both women in that scene. I could see it. I could feel it. And it's, I'm never going to be ready for anything like that. Like literally somebody will say, I don't want to play with her right now. And I'll be like, ah, oh my God, my heart. So when she is like fully in pain, I'm just, I can't, I will not be able to do it. It's like I will, obviously, but yes. Oh my God.
Well, when it comes to the teenage version, my having once been a teenager in your surroundings, in your environment, and a teenager who has experienced various levels of absolute chaotic meltdown mess, and you being an absolute brilliant star best friend, you have been wonderful. So I have been on the receiving end of Lisa the Comforter to a teenage soul. So I think you're going to do great.
Oh my God. But I'm going to cry. Different.
No. Oh my God. No.
I'm okay. Okay.
We're wrapping it up. We're getting to the end.
Here. Yeah. That's it. So they snuggle and your heart just breaks.
Yeah, it does. And Lorelai does exactly what I think you would do. Without having to move very far, she grabs the phone and nice quietly. I love that she's able to just kind of like softly speak into the phone, talk to whatever guy's name is, Jason or something. It's Lorelai. I need a pizza with everything. Okay, boom. And that's it. You know, it's as simple and straightforward as that. She's in good hands.
I think it the feeling of needing to feel like you're doing something. Like I would have a hard time just sitting there with her. I would like that feeling of like action would be really hard for me to repress. So just being like, okay, what can I do? I'm going to do something. Let's order the pizza. Even if she doesn't want to eat it, at least I feel like I'm doing something. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That's it. No more.
No more. We will be moving along next episode. But yeah, altogether a fascinating episode. Another hard to watch. This is so interesting about this show is it has some absolutely ridiculous, silly scenes and super lighthearted and really, really, like I fully understand how it's a lot of people's comfort show. I get it. I totally do. But it does have those scenes that are really hard to watch. And I think it's because they do such a great job of making it so real. And they really write real people's emotions and reactions and complexity of emotions and Rory's behavior in that scene. At first glance, it just seems like, what? This is so out of character. What a terrible choice. No. But as you unpacked, yeah, there's a kind of a, like a, an element of a self-destructive something in there of like a fascination and a, like a sort of a selfish weirdness in there. And
that's her, like, I think she's lashing out. That is her like quiet lashing out. And I think that might be kind of like the term that I was looking for, where she's not being risky and like doing all these crazy things, but her being drawn to Tristan is her like lashing out against the situation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
What an episode.
So.
Well, that's us. As always, thank you so much for watching and for listening and for tuning in. We really, really enjoy knowing that you're checking in with us every week. And you're enjoying the show. We love hearing your reactions and your thoughts on the episodes. She's been Lisa. I've been Jenny. We have been the Belladonna Watch Club. Tune in next week on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, if you haven't subscribed, then please do so. We'd love to have you along. Leave us a comment. Leave us a like wherever you can. It's all very much appreciated. And until next time, that's all from me. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.